The meaning of dandelions. From The Secret Language of Plants. By Andrina. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of J.K. Rowling. Chapter 3. Dogs don't see in black and white. It's more like a scale of gray. The key to surviving Azkaban was to stop feeling altogether. Make yourself one with the cold stone of the cells. That way the Dementors couldn't steal the feelings from you and you didn't go mad. Or not too mad. At least that was Sirius's strategy. A few cells down to the left, his cousin Bella had opted for letting pure rage carry her through the years, repeating again and again all the evil things she had done, and the ones that she would do when she got out, which she had no doubt would happen. Fury could protect you. Fury could take over, so that you felt nothing else. It barely fed the Dementors, so you could experience it fully. A sort of irate madness that brought you a small measure of satisfaction at the thought of burning the world and you in it. But that was only for the hard and tough ones. The people who, like Sirius, were there for life, and the ones who had made it past the one-year mark. It was agreed that if you didn't die on your third year, nothing would kill you. After 3 years, you had learned to eat without hunger and drink without thirst and live with no sleep. Usually people simply fell into despair and stopped eating and talking and moving and simply wished for death to come, too tired to go look for it themselves. Azkaban was quiet, except for Bella and occasionally Rabastin and Elysia. It was also pretty boring, it had to be. Sirius used to care about the clouds in the window of his cell, or the noise of the storm in the sea. But the Dementors took that. It had been so long since he allowed himself to feel something, but now, despite the heavy presence of Dementors all around him, Sirius felt surprise, and a new kind of despair, and sadness, and denial. Mooney was dragged to the cell in front of him. They had been friends, after all. The Dementors expected they would have a lot to share. Two things happened. Two very important, life-changing things. Remus didn't want to talk to Sirius. At first, he simply sat in his cell with his back to him. When the place started to get to him, he looked at Sirius and cursed him for his betrayal. This was not one of the things. The food in Azkaban wasn't bad, considering everything else. It was enough to support an adult and keep them alive and healthy for years if they managed to eat it all, which rarely happened. Sirius suspected they enjoyed picking up half-eaten dishes. For many, the image of food had become intolerable, and the thought of eating it was unbearable. Yet seeing that you didn't eat it all also felt like a failure. Too weak to eat and too weak to kill yourself. Sirius had learned to eat with his eyes closed, mechanically, until he couldn't find another spoonful in the dish. It was easier then to keep himself alive. Elysia's cell was in front and to the left. Sirius had spied her eating from the bowl like a dog, on all fours and big gulps. She ate fast and she ate all, and always ended with a look of defiance. There was food, but there was nothing to treat lycanthropy. Sirius saw as his friend transformed with the first full moon how he writhed in pain, how his screams turned into howls. Mooney had explained a lifetime ago when they were all children in their second year, how it felt during the transformation. It was like the worst kind of toothache you could imagine. That sounded a bit silly, but he elaborated. It was a pain and an urge that didn't let you rest and didn't let you think, and all you wanted was for it to stop. If there was someone with you, you would lash out at them, because even the faint sound of their heartbeat was torture. If there was no one else, the beast turned against itself. Pain would distract you from the agony of the moon. Animals, too. Animals could distract you from the curse. Remus had discovered that sometimes a cat came to the shrieking shack and seemed undisturbed by the wolf. That was what convinced them to try to become animagi. The wolf didn't hurt other animals and was soothed by their presence. It felt natural. When Sirius saw the wolf scratching and throwing itself against the wall and the bars, when he saw the blood starting to run, he didn't think about it. He transformed. This was one of the two life-changing discoveries of Azkaban. Sirius transformed, and so did the world. There was color. Dogs see in gray, but also blue and a really strange array of yellows. Sirius could never describe it properly. There had always been some color there, but Sirius had completely forgotten about it, and now he saw. He had also forgotten about smells, and he was hit suddenly with 1,001 different calls to his nose. There was his own smell, and the smell of the friend in front, and his blood and the stone, the iron of the bars, the salt of the sea, the sweat and piss from Elysia's cell, the reek in Rabastan's, the milky smell of Bellatrix, the moss growing on the stone, the wood of a door, and the rust on the nails. There was a world. Sirius was awake, and he was experiencing a world he had forgotten. He whined at Mooney and was ignored, but by the end of the night, the wolf seemed to notice him and recognized him. He was less distressed. In the morning, Sirius didn't turn back to human. Dementors were blind and they wouldn't know. They couldn't hurt him as much when he was an animal. He could keep the colors and the smells and the feelings and a bit of his mind. Remus talked to him at last. He spoke with broken sentences from the corner of his cell. He was strong. He was fighting back the Dementors. He would not be one to give in to despair and let himself die. He wouldn't, because Remus's worst thoughts were all about what was happening outside and about the child he couldn't protect anymore. Remus talked of a child that was hungry and the vision of a purple ring that haunted him. You could not feel anything like happiness in Azkaban. But Sirius listened in dog form, laying down, mirroring his friend's posture. He listened how Harry had been rescued and had been safe and loved, and Sirius felt his heartbeat increase. He felt like only dogs feel. Joy. Few things have such intensity. Remus could only speak through anguish. How scared Harry must have been. How Remus had failed. Remus regretted. He regretted he was the usurper. He had taken James's role. He had let Harry call him Dad. What Sirius heard was, Harry got to call someone Dad. He did not grow an orphan. He knew he was loved. This was the effect of Azkaban. Remus regretted what Sirius knew was the biggest gift James could ever receive. He knew that James would happily let himself be erased, be forgotten, and turned into nothing, if it meant that Harry didn't grow up feeling his absence. Sirius knew this because he was his godfather. He had made a promise to James. Please let my child be happy. If something happens to us, don't let him mourn us. Don't let him grow up with the dead. And how had Sirius failed that promise? But Mooney hadn't. He had fulfilled it. Sirius was starting to think much more clearly. Remus survived the first year in Azkaban. Each transformation weakened his body, but the wolf that consumed him also protected him. The wolf that 3 days before the moon and 3 days after made itself known, hiding behind the gold of Remus's pupils. The wolf gave him a razor's edge. There was pain in it, but pain was good in here. It was sweet. It brought something that was the opposite of numbness. On those days he believed Sirius when he told him about Wormtail. On those days he ate his ration and he threw his long arm across the bars of his cell to the one beside him and ate the remains of Travers's food. Sirius hadn't heard Travers speak in 2 years, maybe three. If he objected to the food theft, he only had to say so. 1 week of every four, Remus had a fighting chance. 3 weeks out of four, Remus lived in shadows and fog. He could only think of his failure protecting Harry. He could only think of the things said during the trial where he was present but not allowed to speak. How he was a monster. How he had stolen Harry and taken him away from his birthright. His birthright. Like Aurora's. And the night she returns to the castle, the green light got her. Harry had been so scared by the green light. What if it got him, too? Remus was weakened and tired and spent a lot of time surrounded by the worst kind of repetitive intrusive thoughts that devoured all. Sirius lived in a limbo, half feeling and half thinking and neither animal nor human. He was starting to hate the terribly bland food they were brought every day. He ached for something with flavor and a good smell. Nevertheless, they were the two less insane inmates of the whole prison, until there was a new arrival, that is, Hogwarts's gamekeeper. Harry was in Hogwarts. They cajoled and enticed and taunted and pulled every trick and charm of the marauders until they managed to make Hagrid speak. Harry was in Hogwarts. So was someone calling himself the heir of Slytherin. There was a monster roaming around the school. People thought it was Hagrid, but it wasn't him. Now everyone in the prison perked up. They threatened and wheedled and threw everything they had. Their howls resonated in the prison's walls and rose in a wave of emotion so strong that it took the Dementors a while before they could devour it all. Hagrid was removed from the prison. No one knew what that meant. Maybe they'd found it wasn't him after all, the one with the monster. Every Death Eater in the building had said so. Over a dozen raving witnesses that would testify that the heir of Slytherin could not be a half-breed. Or maybe he had died already. He had soon become quiet and morose after a week. Harry was still in Hogwarts. There was a monster in Hogwarts. Even with minds split between animal and human, the thought was easy to chase. This was the second life-changing event. It was just as important as the first. It was raining. That was good. Sirius had observed that Dementors were not fans of the rain. They would go out if they had to, but heavy rain soaked their cloaks and limited their movement, and it disguised smells and sounds.
Screams! There's screams, my dear! Scream! No one will hear you, no one will come, none of your friends! Now the wife, poor little wife, cut her fingers, cut her eyes. Crucio! Crucio, Crucio, Crucio for the Dark Lord. You don't say his name. You don't sully his name with your mud tongue.
When it rained, the Dementors retreated and the prison belonged to the inmates. Tonight, Bellatrix was talking even more than usual. Robaston had laughed twice. It was raining, but clouds did nothing against the moon. It was something that 13-year-old Peter had found very unfair. Remus transformed even when the moon wasn't visible.
Yes, yes, yes! Scream, little pet! Let me hear you scream!
Remus was starting to transform, and unlike in the school here, he didn't try to quiet down his screams of pain. There was no point in being ashamed or embarrassed in Azkaban, and screaming felt good. When Sirius transformed, he was a big dog. But not so big that he couldn't squeeze through the bars of the cells. He only required the will to do it. He was used to ignoring the pain. Getting Mooney out would be harder. The wolf was big, really big. Sirius was thinking maybe he could find something to bend the bars and make a space big enough for the wolf to pass. He would have to transform back to dog right away, though, or if they were lucky, perhaps he could find the keys somewhere nearby.
Oh, the screams of the mudbloods, they scream! And the traitors! The traitors will burn and the traitors will bleed! Blood traitors, take their blood, leave them dry!
Sirius needn't have bothered thinking up an elaborate plan after all. The cell's doors were weak. Very few people had the will to escape, so the doors didn't have to withstand much. These doors in particular had withstood the onslaughts of an adult werewolf for over a year. The thick iron frame was showing some bumps and bends in a few places. Sirius pulled and the wolf pushed, dashing madly at him, and the whole thing was torn from the wall. There was a howl. Not from the wolf, not from Remus, who simply growled at Sirius, but from the rest of the prisoners, who were now dragging themselves to the doors and pressing their faces to the bars to see. Sirius had transformed back, and just in time. The wolf sniffed at him with interest and didn't attack him. More importantly, Sirius felt more confident in this form. After that, it was simply a matter of herding Mooney down the stairs and through an inner patio to the main gate. All the doors were unlocked. There were no other barriers or traps. What for? People who don't have the will to live don't have the will to move, to escape, to act. Just like that, they were outside. Azkaban was warded from apparating, and it had muggle-repelling charms as well as being unplantable, not a place easy to access or leave. It had, however, a Corran boat. A small thing made of dark wood tied to the shore with a thin silver chain. Once a week, the Dementors let it loose, and the boat went to the mainland and returned a day later with supplies. It was not the same boat in which Sirius had been brought. And there was another larger one, somewhere in the coast of Scotland, for the transport of prisoners. It was the one the Ministry officials rowed every 5 years or so to pass inspection at the prison. They usually left before 2 hours had gone. The boat was regarded as too small to hold any occupants, but Sirius managed to push Mooney in just fine. The chain burned when Sirius removed it, a flameless burn like that of acid, but that was nothing. He shook his hand, or was it his paw, and he pushed the boat in the water and jumped in. It was small. He had to press himself against Mooney's flank, and the boat was half sunk in the water. But it was enough. Remus woke, confused and in pain. He had a dry mouth, his joints ached, and his throat was sore, as if he had been exposed to the cold and humidity and he was starting to get a cold. He opened his eyes to the vision of sand and a gray sea. As he slowly sat up, he realized he was naked. Remus had been a werewolf since he was 5 years old. Waking up naked and confused was nothing new, although this time it was even more perplexing than usual. Sirius was to his right, naked too and smiling, and Remus couldn't believe he had gotten to shag him and he couldn't remember. Also, Sirius wasn't as handsome as he used to be, and he was sporting an unkempt beard, when he had always been very well groomed. Wait, Sirius was a traitor. He killed Peter, he was sent to Azkaban. Only Remus remained to mourn and remember, and later with Snape, to raise Harry and ensure he grew up happy. Why were they on a beach?
Remember that time McGonagall gave us detention? And she locked us in a classroom. But we climbed 3 floors down the wall. And she wouldn't believe Filch when he said he had seen us throwing snowballs by the Quidditch field.
Sirius was leaning back on his arms, his face up to the sun.
She was so angry. She's going to blow something up when she hears.
Sirius, what?
We broke out of Azkaban.
Sirius closed his eyes. The wind was pushing his hair back, long and matted and black still.
We got out in a tiny boat that filled with water. It was windy and raining and we capsized.
He stopped to push a strand of hair away from his mouth.
And then we swam to the coast.
It was cold. The sea wind harsher than anything the sun could do to warm them.
Is there any reason for our newtness?
Asked Remus. Not that it was very important, but he wondered.
He shouldn't sleep in wet clothes,
Sirius said with a natural air. Their prisoner robes had indeed been laid out to dry on some bushes over the beach line.
You did not kill Peter.
I wish I had.
He betrayed them.
Yes.
I'm still angry with you,
said Remus, getting up. He was hungry. He hadn't felt hungry in a while. His toes were getting cold.
Now let's go find Harry.
Good.
Sirius smiled. There was electricity in his eyes, a spark coming back.
But really, McGonagall is going to be so mad.
Remus, she's going to be mad, McGonagall.
End of chapter 3.
For the full text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 and Tumblr pages of Endrina. First pass editing by Ohana. Music by Sean Johnson. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information found on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. There you can also find all the other stories that I've read, as well as links to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.